Ekaha,
he one alone.
Nanatvam,
varieties.
Anvichchan,
so desiring.
Yogatalpa,
from the bedstead of mystic slumber.
Samuttitaha,
thus generated.
Viryam,
the semana.
Hiranmayam,
golden hue.
Devaha,
the demigod.
Mayaya,
by the external energy.
Vyasrijat,
perfectly created.
Tridha,
in three features.
Translation.
The Lord, while lying on his bed of mystic slumber, generated the seminal symbol, golden in hue, through external energy, out of his desire to manifest varieties of living entities from himself. In the Bhagavad Gita 9, 7 and 8, the creation and annihilation of the material world are stated as follows. Sava bhutani konteya prakritim yanti mamikam kalpakshaye punasthani kalpado visrijami aham and prakritim svamabhastabhya visrijami puna punaha bhuta gramam imam kritsnam avasham prakrite vasat.
At the end of each millennium, the creative forces, namely the material nature and the living entities who struggle in the material nature, all merge together into the transcendental body of the Lord. And again, when the Lord desires to manifest them, all of them are again displayed by the Lord. Therefore, the material nature is working under the control of the Lord. All of them, under the agency of material nature, and under the control of the Lord, are thus repeatedly created and annihilated by the will of the Lord. As such, before the creation or manifestation of the material cosmic world, the Lord exists as total energy, Mahasamashti, and thus desiring himself to be diffused to many, he expands himself further into multi-total energy, Samashti. From the multi-total energy, he further expands himself into individuals in three dimensions, namely adhyatmik, adhidaivik, and adhibhautik, as explained before, vyashti. As such, the whole creation and the creative energies are non-different and different simultaneously. Because everything is an emanation from him, the Mahavishnu, or Mahasamashti, nothing of the cosmic energies is different from him, but all such expanded energies have specific functions and display as designed by the Lord, and therefore they are simultaneously different from him. Living entities are also similar energy, marginal potency of the Lord, and thus they are simultaneously one with and different from him. At the stage of non-manifestation, the living energies remain potent in the Lord. And when they are let loose in the cosmic manifestation, they are exhibited differently in terms of different desires under the modes of nature. Such differential manifestations of the living energies are conditional states of the living entities. The liberated living entities, however, in the Sanatana eternal manifestation, are unconditionally surrendered souls, and therefore they are not subject to the conditions of creation and annihilation. So, this creation takes place by the glance of the Lord from his bedstead of mystic slumber. And thus all the universes and the Lord of the universe, Brahma, are again and again manifested and annihilated. Om Agyananti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Miritamena Tasmai Sivirove Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Yenam Bhutale Swayam Rupa Karamaiham Tadati Swaparantikam Nama Srishta Manumati Sachiputra Matra Swarupam Rupam Tasya Garajam Kuru Pirin Maturin Gosta Pitin Radha Kunda Girivara Mahorari Kamarava Asam Praptoya Sapatita Kripaya Sri Gurum Tam Natosvi Ekona Natva Manvichchan Yoga Kalpat Samutita Viryam Hiran Mayam Devo Mayaya Vyasrijatridha.
The Lord, while lying on his bed of mystic slumber, generated the seminal symbol, golden in hue, through external energy out of his desire to manifest varieties of living entities from himself alone.
This is another very dense or condensed, both dense and condensed, purport or elaboration on the concept or the philosophy of creation given in Srimad Bhagavatam and Srila Prabhupada's very unique revelation or inspiration in how to present this creation of the Lord as a lila. The Lord creates out of his desire. He creates varieties, nanatvam. He creates varieties of living entities. The living entities created their next bodies by desire and by their activities. And it's said in the purport that those living entities lay dormant or potent, they were potent, they had the desires were encapsulated in their being in a dormant state in the Mahatattva, in when the Lord withdraws the universal creation. And the creation is so described here in Srimad Bhagavatam and in other Vedic literatures in a very graphic, in a very it's a very visual, it has a very strong visual impact on the consciousness, on the mind, that this creation is not something that is accidental. This creation is not something that is a second thought, but this creation is something that is very much a part of, it's a strategy of the Lord to provide for the living entities an opportunity to rectify their independent nature and to go back home, back to Godhead. And everything in his creation is perfect. The Lord doesn't miss anything in his creation. And that's why the Srimad Bhagavatam goes to great length and great detail to describe every minute dimension of the Lord's thought process and of the Lord's actions and of the Lord's intent behind his creation. Because he's a person. Is the Supreme Person, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That Supreme Personality of Godhead has relationship, unlimited relationships, has capacity to engage in unlimited relationships. And the creation is a reciprocation with the jivas in relationship. The Lord creates this material world to reciprocate with the independent desire of the living entity. That's quite an amazing concept in itself. That the Lord, he provides the living entities the opportunity to enjoy separately from him. And at the same time, he desires their company so much, he desires them to come back to him and to be rectified, that he provides them facility that they can understand their errant ways. They can understand they can become inspired to correct themselves on the path and to go back home to Godhead. Yesterday I was speaking with Krishna Prem Prabhu outside of a crossroads. He was directing people into the door at the entrance of crossroads. I was always wondering how do they get so many people to eat in crossroads every day? 350 people, 400 people eating in crossroads. It's because they have a devotee there directing traffic in the staircase. Everyone's coming down Swanson Street and then he's pointing like this, detour. And a detour, you can't go any further, there's some roadworks up there. You have to go through the restaurant and come out the other end. And then you meet all the ecstatic devotees up in the restaurant. And then they don't go back out. They stay there all day. Eat halva. I think I've had halva every day since I've been in Melbourne. I've been here for about a week and a half. I've had halva every day. That's my halva fix. We don't have halva much. In India, they don't cook halva in it. Not much, not like they cook it here with the yellow sauce. And the... When we used to serve in crossroads, we used the people, you know, the customers. We didn't have 350 customers. We had a few customers, but they used to come and they'd say, I want some of that pudding with the yellow sauce. And the yellow sauce wasn't custard. Some yellow sauce and custard. That was Jagadatma's famous halva. We used to eat the halva. I'd come there as a student before I joined. We'd eat the halva and have second servings of halva, and we go to the botanical gardens. Instead of going to the university, we went that way. Instead of going back to a campus, we went across the bridge. I went to the gardens and we used to sleep in the gardens all afternoon. And then wake up for a 5 o'clock lecture. So this Krishna Prempu, he was talking to me like he was preaching to me. I was bewildered. I was in the city thinking, what are all these people doing here? And so he got me. You could see this guy he's a bit bewildered. And he started preaching to me, saying, look at these people, they're so happy, aren't they? And I was thinking, yeah, they look happy. They're running around, they've got big smiles on their face, and they're doing all sorts of exciting things, buying shoes. There's about 500 shoe shops on Swanson Street, I noticed yesterday. Every second shop's a shoe shop. I went into one of the shops, and I got really bewildered. I was thinking, I need a pair of shoes. And I went in there and said, how can I choose a pair of shoes in here? There are 5,000 shoes to choose from. Then I thought, I don't need shoes. I can just do with the shoes. But every second shop was a shoe shop. Anyway, he said to me, they're so happy, these people. They look happy. Krishna's made them an arrangement for them to feel like they're happy. They're satisfied. Krishna's such a kind God. He said, Krishna's such a kind God that these people here, they're running around like mad people, but they're still happy. They're getting some experience of happiness. Krishna's so kind. He's letting them be happy. He's letting them be happy to forget him. He's letting them be happy. And the devotees are happy too. The devotees are trying to think of God, think of Krishna, and Krishna's letting them be happy. He's giving them happy. So Krishna's giving everybody happiness to different degrees. But the devotee's happiness is a different happiness. He went on to explain to me. This is a Srimad Bhagavatam class in Swanson Street. He went on to explain to me that the devotee's happiness is millions of times more profound and millions of times more real and significant than the kami's happiness. Because their happiness is temporary and the devotees are seeking happiness in the eternal. And because we're seeking happiness in something that is spiritual or transcendental, eternal, the soul becomes enlivened. Prabhupada says that bhakti yoga is a transcendental dynamic nature of the soul. It's that when you do action, when you do something, you become enlivened. Because bhakti is a principle that the inspiration for our action is to serve. The inspiration for our action is to engage our senses, to engage our mind, to engage our intelligence in a higher purpose. Even if we're engaging in a lower purpose, there's some satisfaction, there's some reciprocation, there's some enjoyment. Something is there. But when we do it, when we connect with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then the enjoyment becomes very sandrananda visheshatma, condensed nectar. It becomes something like you can't experience that same taste in the material energy. That's only available through the spiritual energy by connecting with a higher purpose. So he fixed me up and I went on my merry way up Swanson Street and caught a tram straight back to the temple. But I don't want to risk it anymore. Get back to the temple and have some prasadam at the temple. Go from the restaurant to the temple for prasadam. No. So that is Krishna's special mercy. His creation is a special mercy on the living entities. If you want to enjoy, here's somewhere to enjoy it. Full facility for enjoyment. Everything is there. Everything is complete. In the Ishopanishad, it says that the invocation shloka says that Krishna's creation, his manifestation, is complete. It's perfect in itself. And all the emanations from the Supreme Personality of Godhead are complete units. There's nothing missing. Purnam. Purnam, Purnam, Purnam. Punat, Purnam, Punachute. They're all complete. Krishna's units, Krishna's external energy. Purnam eva vishishyate. And therefore, nothing. Krishna is not depleted in any way. That's the real purport the Prabhupada gives for this Om Purnam Idam verse. That when Krishna creates, he doesn't become less. He becomes greater for his creation. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada said, just like a businessman. When he's a businessman, he has many franchisees. But he doesn't become less. Every time a franchisee joins up, he doesn't become depleted. He becomes happier, right? He becomes richer. You got another one, another one, another one. He's not depleting. He's not getting any lesser of a person. He's still a person. His energies are expanding. The businessman's energies are expanding in multifarious ways, but he's not depleting. When Krishna creates, if that's it, Prabhupada says, is that so for in a mundane sense? Then for Krishna, who's completely independent, who's completely spiritual, who doesn't have any contact with the material energy, certainly he doesn't deplete. Certainly he doesn't become less by his creation, by anything, by any of his interaction. And that's the flaw in the Mayavad philosophy, Prabhupada says. That Shankaracharya, he proves that he doesn't understand Vedanta, Prabhupada says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. In Lord Chaitanya, in the seventh chapter in the Adilila, there's Lord Chaitanya in five features. And there you can read some detailed analysis of the faults of the Mayavad philosophy. And Prabhupada explains there the Shakti Parinamavad, as opposed to the Mayavad. The Parinamavad is a philosophy of transformation. Of Shakti, of energy. Krishna's energies are transformed. Krishna, when we are part of Krishna's energy, Amaya Bhamso Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, we're eternal fragmental parts of Krishna's energy, known as his Tatastha Shakti, where his marginal energy. And Krishna has multifarious energies, his internal energy, marginal energy, and his external energy. And this material world that he creates is just a part of his energy. Doesn't deplete him in any way. And when Lord Chaitanya was a small boy, Prabhupada, he refers to this pastime many times, and it's instructive in terms of functionality, it's instructive in terms of cause and effect. And if we understand cause and effect and origins and relationships and functionality, we understand the personal siddhanta of Vaishnavism. Vaishnavism is especially the Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Of all the four sampradayas, they're all bona fide and they're all beneficial and they're all connecting us and all refuting Mayavadism, That's the one consistent thread through the Vaishnava Sampradaya Acharyas, is their refutation of Mayavadism and their establishment of this Parinamavad, this transformational Shakti of Krishna. And they give it different names. In Gaudiya Vaishnavism, we refer to our philosophy as the Chintya Veda, a Veda philosophy, which is Prabhupada's referring to in today's purport, today's commentary on the creation of the Lord. And so, Mother Sachi, when Lord Chaitanya was eating dirt as Nimai, he was eating dirt instead of the nice sandesh and rasgulla that Mother Sachi had provided for him. She came out and scolded him and asked him, why is he eating dirt? He's got such nice prasadam. He's got such nice sweets and you're eating dirt. And he said, he's arguing with his mother, what's the difference? This dirt and rasgulla, the same thing, comes from the same place. So he was propounding this, he was representing this Shankaracharya philosophy. And his mother, who's not a great scholar, not a great sage, but she refuted his argument. And she explained that this dirt, if you eat, she said, it might come from the same place, but there's been transformation. This energy has changed. It's a different thing. If you eat the energy in its raw state in form of dirt or grass, you don't have a system that can digest this food. You can't transform that into minerals and naturally. There has to be another process. And she said the cow can. The cow can do that. The cow will eat the grass and transform it and produce a different product. But as humans, you'll get sick. You'll become diseased. If you eat dirt, you'll become diseased. It's not good for you. It's not your food. It's not nutrition. And she said, this earth, if I pour water into this dirt, then the water will just, it'll soak up the water and it'll just disperse. I can't do anything with the water. I can't carry that water. But the same earth, when it's shaped into a pot, into a vessel, and dried, it can be used to contain water. I can carry the water. If I pour the water into the vessel, it's earth, but it's transformed earth. It's a different form or a different state. It's in a different condition than the soil. So it's transformed and it's baked and it's shaped and it has a different function. So Prabhupada explains in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that this is a functional explanation to illustrate the clear understanding of transformation, of understanding that there's a purpose. Everything has a purpose. Everything has a function in the material world. And when we use things for their proper function, things work. Things go well. If we use a mat for its proper function as a mat to sit on, we get some satisfaction from the mat. But if we use the mat for a mop, that happens sometimes. In Auckland Temple, they have this routine. Sometimes they have this routine of using the mats to mop up the water after Tulsi Puja. You know, there's a lot of water there. So someone comes and mops it up with the mat. I remember this because the first time I went to the Auckland Temple, after the Tulsi Puja, I sat down on a mat and it was like a sponge. It was completely wet. I thought, wow, it was wet. So I threw it on the side and I got another mat and it was wet. It was wet from the day before. Still wet from the day before. So there's a whole pile of wet mats in the temple. And I couldn't work out why that was. I thought that maybe the window was open, it was raining or something like that. A few days later I saw someone mopping up the floor with a mat. Here they have this nice system where you mop it up with a cloth, because the function of the cloth, the purpose of the cloth is to mop things up. Not a mat. If you use the right thing for the right purpose, then things go smoothly and there's consistency and predictability and peace of mind and dry backsides. So it's functional, it's purposeful, isn't it? We should use things for their right purpose and right function. And the ultimate function is to connect everything with Krishna, to connect everything, to do what we do for God, to do what we do to see the connection with Krishna. That will be the ultimate satisfaction, the ultimate perfection of our activities and engagements in Krishna consciousness. Then when I got upstairs in Crossways, I met this Vrindavan Greg, right? Vrindavan Greg was sitting there and he was preaching like usual. He's been preaching more than anyone in this temple for the last 30 years, 35 years. Greg used to get on the tram and just like preach to the top of his lungs, to the whole tram. Everyone on the number one tram knows Greg. Vrindavan Greg's a legend. Many of my family, my family are from Melbourne, they all know Vrindavan Greg. They think he's like, you know, one of the senior devotees, one of the top devotees in the temple. Oh yeah, we know that guy. Vrindavan Greg, I think, oh my God. I know Greg. Greg sat next to one of my brothers on a tram once. And he's talking to him. And my brother goes, yeah, my brother's a Hare Krishna. And then Greg says, oh, I know Prana, you know, we're best friends. And Prana, he told my brother my whole devotional history. So my brother, how did you find all this stuff out? Yeah, Vrindavan Greg told me on the tram. So Vrindavan Greg was talking to this girl. And then he called me over. Young girl, she was eating her halva at Crossways. And I sat down and he said, this girl's going to become a devotee soon. And I said, really? That's nice. And he said, yeah, she's very close to becoming a devotee. And I said, how do you work that out? And then he told me. And I said, well, yeah, sounds good. I think she could become a devotee. This girl could become a devotee. And I went up and told Yogita, who was serving out. I said, she's going to become a devotee. That girl's going to become a devotee. Go and talk to her. But she said to me one thing. I sat down before I went to get my prasad and sat down and spoke to her. And she said, I was just getting into the middle of their conversation, but she was talking about education. She's a university student. And she said, she's from Bali. And I think some of you might know her. Her name is Dia. She's been here a couple of times. She said, when I read Bhagavad Gita, she said, I feel so happy. I feel so ecstatic, she said. She said, happiness is not the right word. I feel ecstatic. I feel ecstasy. And then she could see tears coming in her eyes, just talking about reading Bhagavad Gita. I think, God, I wish I could feel that ecstasy. And then she said, all of the history that we read in the schools, all of the sciences that we were taught, all of this knowledge that we received, I realized when I read Bhagavad Gita that it was all bogus. It was all wrong. It was all, she said that, that how could it be that somebody discovered Indonesia, that they're the first people, or that Columbus, America was discovered by Columbus, or Australia was discovered by Captain Cook. How could it be like that? She said, there must have been so many people in these countries, and Prabhupada said exactly the same thing, right? It's not that, you know, Columbus found America. There's been plenty of people here before Columbus. And we know there's been plenty of people here before Captain Cook came here, that's for sure. So she was really analyzing this falsity in history, the way we present history, that the history of these countries, it's from the explorers, from the the explorers and those people who were, what do they call them in America? Like Daniel Boone and those guys. They're like the people that founded the country on the sweat of their brow, and they're given all the credit for America. They founded America. Well, America's always existed, and there's been plenty of people there before they came. And so she was sharing that with us, and then she said, look, I've got 2 weeks holiday. I really want to move into the temple for 2 weeks. And Greg said, look, done. We'll sort it out. We'll work it out. And I thought, I don't know if you can just move into the temple. So I called up the temple. Can she move in? I don't know if she can move in right away. Okay, so somebody took over. And she might turn up here in a few days. But she had a very good realization, and she was able to express that understanding that Krishna is the supreme, that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, and that we're his servants. One thing that really struck me was what she said. She said previously, she said in contemporary society, it's very heavy male energy. And I thought, oh, here we go. It's going to be a whole women's lib. And then she said, actually, in traditional societies, because she comes from a traditional society, in traditional society, like in Indonesia or Southeast Asia or in India or China even, there's more of female energy. And I said, oh, yeah? How is that? You know? And she said, well, females, their female energy is more inclined to service and more inclined to taking that role in a service attitude. And then I thought, wow, got to get her in the temple. She should be giving Bhagavatam classes. I really had the wrong... I wasn't expecting her to say that. And I think she's got... Her mother's a devotee, actually. Then she told me her mother's a devotee in Bali. Bali's an interesting place for Krishna consciousness, isn't it, Mataji? Because in Bali, until about 15 years ago, there weren't many devotees in Bali, 15, 20 years ago. And Indonesia overall, it's a Muslim country, right? Very heavy Muslim country in Jakarta and Yogyakarta and different places. When you go there, it's very, a little intense. You don't go there so much chanting Hare Krishna on the streets, you know, we're here. So Bali was a little bit like that, although it's a Hindu country. It's a Hindu, very nice Hindu place, and there's temples outside of everyone's house, and everybody's offering agarbattis, like, 300 a day or something like that at the front, and little cakes or something like that. You see incense everywhere in Bali, and then offering little cakes, and they have little altars outside the house, and the birds come and eat all the prasadam, the cakes and things like that. Nobody knows why they're doing all this stuff. They just do it because their grandmother did it, and their grandmother's grandmother did it, and her grandmother. So everyone just does it. Nobody has a clue why they're doing it, just making these cakes and putting this offering at the front on these altars in Bali. But until about 15, 20 years ago, it was still very undercover Krishna consciousness. And then there was some explosion in Bali. I guess Kavi Chandra Maharaj and Bhakti Raghava Swami and Gauramandala Bhumi Prabhu, our Australian Gauramandala Bhumi Prabhu, they started to expand Krishna consciousness, and Bhakti Srup Dhammadamaraj started to expand Krishna consciousness in a very big way, and they did it through book distribution. And then in about 10 years they made more than 1,000 devotees in a small country like that. So there's devotees everywhere. I mean, there's a lot of Australian devotees there, but they're on the beaches. They're at Kruda, surfing the beaches. But and they see the Harinam party. But it's a very dynamic place for Krishna consciousness. And the devotees told me that when they did this book distribution, that Gauramandala Bhumi Prabhu, he translated Bhagavad Gita as it is into Bhasha, into the Indonesian language. And there's another one now at the moment too. And so they said that when the people, because they're Hindus, many, 90% Hindu people in this country, in Bali. And so when they read the Bhagavad Gita, many devotees told me that they read the Bhagavad Gita for the first time, they understood everything that they were doing. They understood, for the first time, they understood, you know, who these Mahabharata figures were. They have these amazing sculptors in the middle of the roundabouts. Who is this Ghatotkach, and who is Bhima, and who is Yudhisthira? They understood all this because they're very beautiful sculptures. The Vedic culture is strong in this part of the world, Southeast Asia. So they started to put all the pieces together and think, oh, that's what it is. And so they just became devotees straight away. They didn't have a clue what they were doing before that. And so they asked one of the Swamis, Subhag Swami, no, they asked Bhakti Srup Dhammaraj if they could keep doing their puja out the front of their house, with all the incense and the cakes and everything, at the front. And he said, well, you can do it, but you leave prasadam there, put the prasadam there, and leave the prasadam, and the birds can eat prasadam. So all the animals and everyone that come to eat, they're eating prasadam. and not the Bhuta Prasadam, because it's for the some kind of, it's to keep the bad elements out of the house, right? To keep the Bhutas away. So he said, feed the Bhutas out there. Let them eat Prasadam and everyone will be happy in Bali. So that was another interesting exchange in terms of this understanding Krishna's position, that Krishna's the Supreme Personality, and that Krishna's creation is purposeful, that Krishna's, that when Krishna creates something, it has a reason for it, it's a function, but functionality, and that when we align ourselves with Krishna's desire, with Krishna's plan, we can rectify our condition of independence, and we can become, once again, enter into this service mood, service mentality of Krishna consciousness, of our real eternal consciousness. And that is that will be for our benefit and the benefit of everybody. Sarvabhuta hiteerataha. This creation is unlimited, and everyone in the creation has an opportunity to go back to Godhead, the human species, Prabhupada says. For the animal species, for the non-moving living entities, for the germs and for the insects, it's difficult. Not impossible, because in Chaitanya Lila they went back to Godhead. But it's nearly impossible. In the Prabhupada says that the human form of life is that it provides the living entity the maximum capacity to realize their identity as a spirit soul, as a servant of God in the human form of life. And therefore we should use this human form of life to perfect our existence and to help others, sarvabhuta hiteerataha, to give others the opportunity to perfect their existence. And I'll just finish up with this interesting understanding or meditation that Krishna is a person and his energies are persons, and that Krishna, when he's the creator of the universes and he's the maintainer of the universes and he's destroying the universes, but he also comes as a person to enable us or to assist us in our developing a personal understanding of God, and to help us to develop this understanding of what we should do here. That God, he came as a man, and God came as a man and he performed activities. He wasn't beyond the rules and regulations of manhood. He came here and he followed rules and regulations. In the same way that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came as a human being and he followed rules and regulations as a grihasthi, followed rules and regulations as a renunciate. And in that way, he established norms. He established a system of living in human civilization. In the Krishna Leela, I wanted to speak about both of them. Quickly, I'll do it. It's Sunday or Saturday?
Saturday.
Okay. Quickly, I'll do it. That in Krishna Leela, when it's in the morning time, it's said that the bumblebees in Dwarka, they become maddened by this aroma that's coming from the garden of the Parijata trees. Has a very intoxicating, sweet aroma, and they become mad with their buzzing. And their loud buzzing arouses the birds. The birds wake up. Because the bees are buzzing, the birds wake up. And the birds start chirping, singing very, very loudly in Dwarka. And they wake up everybody. And their singing is glorification. In the Bhagavatam it says it's a glorification of Krishna. It's like the court poets who come to wake up the king. So the birds every morning, they wake up Krishna by singing his glories very loudly. And everybody wakes up. And Rukmini, she curses the birds. She doesn't like to hear that song of the birds. She hates those roosters in the morning that wake up the first of the roosters. And she curses the roosters. And she says she wished this Brahma Muhurta never happened. She hates Brahma Muhurta. She wants to stay in bed with Krishna. But Krishna, it says, he takes himself away from... He takes himself away from Rukmini, from her embrace, and he engages in his daily activities. And the acharyas explain that this is the purpose. Krishna's lila, his pastimes, are to impress upon us that we have responsibilities and we have regulation and we have to engage in these activities. So Krishna wakes and he takes bath and he performs archana and he does Gayatri Mantra, meditates on himself. We don't meditate on ourselves, but we meditate on Krishna. We meditate on Guru, on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he performs many, many activities that we do in a regulated way, in our archana parati. Krishna did these same things in a different degree, to a different quantity, for sure. When Krishna has finished his daily activities, all of his puja and his meditation and his offerings to different demigods he would offer and to different personalities in his archan, then he would give him charity. And it said that every day he gave badva badva dini dini. Every day he gave 13,107 times 108 cows every day. So he gave a lot of cows in charity every day after he'd done all of his activities. But the principle is that we should give in charity. The principle is we should be clean. The principle is we should be regulated. The principle is we should be awake in the Brahma Muhurta. The principle is we should not curse the Brahma Muhurta or curse the roosters. The principle is we should be alive and awake at that time to engage in spiritual activities to stimulate the consciousness to as a reminder that Krishna's creation is a lila, that Krishna's provided us facility, that we come in gratitude to offer respects to Krishna. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to remember, to remind me who I am. I thought I was an IT waller, or I thought I was an accountant, a chartered accountant, or I thought I was a doctor, or whatever designation we thought we were, that this spiritual process enables us to understand that we might be these things, that might be our livelihood, but actually we're spiritual IT wallers. We're spiritual chartered accountants. That means that for the fruits of our activities, we're connecting that with Krishna, connecting that to God. Any questions or comments? A bit of an abrupt finish. How what?
Lord Krishna is thinking of a chartered accountant.
How does he think of a chartered accountant? He thinks, well, that poor, miserable person has to count all that money all day, has to balance those ledgers. He feels sorry for him. Everybody should feel sorry for a chartered accountant. Thinking, when will that chartered accountant realize that he's a servant of Kuvera and go back and do his proper service? Designations are not bad in and of themselves. We have to live, we have to perform occupational duties. That's not the philosophy. Our philosophy is not that it's all one philosophy and that we just give up our responsibilities. We have responsibilities. We have to, whatever it is, whatever our inclination, yata karma gunam bhava. We got a particular set of senses, a particular intelligence, a particular mind according to our activities and our karmas. And so we dutifully and rightfully accept that as our quota and engage our propensities in full service. There's a saying in the Vedas that we should perform our activities to perfection. We should do them. Our duties should be performed very, very expertly, and with the consciousness that we're a servant of Krishna, a servant of God. That's all. It's just a matter of changing consciousness. Prabhupada said. I was listening to a lecture here in Melbourne. a conversation with the priest here in Melbourne. And Prabhupada made the same point that it's just a matter of consciousness. It's not a matter of changing dress. It's just a matter of consciousness. He said you can be a Muslim, be a Christian, be a Hindu, be whatever you want to be, whatever you want to call yourself, you can be that. But change your consciousness when you're being that thing. When you're being a doctor, when you're being a student, when you're being a truck driver. We have a truck driver who's a devotee in Auckland, New Zealand. He drives trucks and he listens to lectures all days. 8 hours a day he listens to lectures. He's more Krishna conscious than anyone in the temple. And he drives trucks. All sorts of occupational duties you can do as a devotee. There's a few you can't, but most you can. And be happy. Anything else?
So what was Krishna thinking when Krishna also meditates upon himself? So what was he meditating upon? Because as we meditate, we meditate on his pastimes, so we think about him.
We also meditate on our pastimes too. We remember so many wonderful things that we did and how good I looked at my first whatever. The activities we do are very similar. I mean, Krishna meditated on his pastimes and his activities. His form, Shamam Hiranyaparidimba Namali Bahar, he meditated on his peacock feather. He meditated on who he is, Krishna's dress, his activities, his leela. But when Krishna does that, he's not getting a big head and feeling all puffed up. That's why it says, Prabhupada says in the commentary that don't meditate on yourself, because it won't work. You won't get the same effect.
You were saying about our service needs to be perfect, you know. It's a Maha Mantra and we're chanting the Maha Mantra. Do we need to make this perfect as well? So, you know, sometimes we're not chanting it properly, not just with our japa looking around the streets chanting, we're chanting Rama and Rama instead of Rama. So should we be doing this perfect or at least trying to do it?
We had this discussion the other night with someone not here in this assembly. Rama and Rama. In the first thing about Rama and Ramo is that there is some poetic license in when you're going into some form of ecstasy and singing, that there can be some poetic license in pronunciation of the Sanskrit, for sure. Because, you know, some of these swaras, when some of the devotees are singing Krishna, it takes them sometimes 15 minutes to say the word Krishna. That might be exactly how it's pronounced according to the meter. But according to the song and according to the ecstasy and according to the raga, it's acceptable. I mean, Ramo might not be acceptable, but Vrindavan Das Thakur says, and I'm guilty of all sorts of wrong pronunciation for sure in Sanskrit, especially singing, because I don't know what I'm doing when I'm singing, so whatever comes out, and it's, please Krishna, forgive me for my offenses in my barking. But Vrindavan Das Thakur says that if you do it with intention to please God, to please Krishna, Krishna will accept it, even if it's a Vishnaya. Om Namo Vishnaya. Right? We should be trying to do it perfectly, but the correct form is Vishnave. But Vrindavan Das Thakur says, if you don't know your grammar too well, and if you got it mixed up that it's Krishnaya and it's the same thing as Vishnaya, he said, if you did that with an honest heart, with a heart to please Krishna, then he's Bhavagrahi Janadana. He'll accept that. When I talked about that perfection, actually I was thinking about our material activities. that we should do our material activities with responsibility, that we shouldn't cut corners, and we shouldn't be looking at ways to finish up early and finish. We should be performing activities. We should do our duty that will to its full requirements. Not that I've got so many things on, I'll finish work earlier, I'll cut corners here. We do things properly. Okay. Granta Raja Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gopinath.